Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Reality NSFW. Professor Tim watches Survivor. We're here to talk about season 4, Marquesas, episode number 6. Professor Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing immensely well. I'm on a slightly different computer today, so I hope everything goes well. I'm feeling a little bit like Princess Leia in the first Star Wars film. I was going to say it's my muff, but I understand that's got a slightly negative meaning too, so I have to be a bit careful. She had these sort of earmuffs, didn't she? She looked very elegant. I think it's a style we could. I ought to have some sort of crocheted cover, and then I could get into my Star Wars spirit.
There you go. Got to get into
take
the
on the world
here.
Or the universe, actually.
Yeah,
Masters of the Universe. There we are. He-Man. I could become He-Man. That's not quite Star Wars, is it? I'm telling you, I'm betraying all my 1970s film references here.
So we are without Cody with us, but we are going to still break down this episode. And I'm sure you have many, many opinions about it.
I really today it sort of divides into two. There's only two things that really stuck out for me, and I'm sure we are going to talk about those. Of course, the specter of Gabriel sort of hovers over the entire episode. I think Gabriel got more mention than most of the other cast members who we actually saw. It's such a disaster to have got rid of him, and I do hope we can find him and get him on the show, because we haven't really had any guests so far, and it's so much nicer to have sort of real people rather than me. So I'm hoping we can reach out to Gabriel. Gabriel, blow your horn. Come on. We have to get him here, because I think he understands the show in a way that I think most of the other people don't, but they understand the show that it's become. But Gabriel understands the show that I would have played and that I would have sort of supported. I think he was very, and he was greatly loved by the production. So it was so lovely to see sort of Pascal's tribute to him and reading the poem. Not a terribly good poem, but nevertheless, you know, it's the affection rather than the literary merit, which I think is important. I just like Gabriel.
I liked him as well, but let's also remember it is Survivor, and he wasn't really there to necessarily play the game.
No, he was there to play the game. He wasn't there to play the game. He was there to have the experience, which I think is really what the thing is about. This is about reality TV. The game is the MacGuffin. The game is the excuse, so that the participants feel that they're doing something. Otherwise, they're just wandering around aimlessly like zombies. Don't you hate zombie films? I do find it so disturbing seeing somebody with half a jaw walking around. I just think, that's like mourning, isn't it, really? It's
Yeah, I'm not really a zombie fan in particular, but I think Gabe would have done better on a season one platform. He would have been great for Borneo, great for that season.
He
was a great character. So he would have done amazing with that type of platform because many of those people did not necessarily know what they were doing and weren't there for the game per se. They were there for the experience.
The experience. And but you see, this is the thing. What we want to see is character development. And so we've got two things with television we can do. We can have character development where the character grows in front of our eyes, like some sort of sunflower. Or we can have character discovery, where we are rather dull and we gradually meet these characters over a period of time. It's rather like being the queen. Say, oh, hey, where have you come from? How lovely. But what happens is we give these characters something to do so that, you know, they're not sort of stuck like zombies. And that something to do has taken over the format. Now, what we've got here in Marquesa, I think, is that something to do has taken over the whole show, and it's become slightly formulaic in the space of one series. So between series three and series four, you have a sort of a yawning chasm of predictability. And I've been trying to work out why I find this show so frustrating. And it's because of its predictability. So I've already said I think I know who's going to win, and I'm playing the game. I'm playing our game very obediently. I'm not trying to race forward to look at future episodes. I'm doing it episode by episode. But sometimes I'm finding it really tough sitting down and saying, I've got to watch this thing now. And I'm looking for those things that sparkle so that I'm not sort of, so I don't become a sort of moaning mini where everything I say is negative. And I felt there were things today which sparkled. And there was something which really struck me. Am I allowed to tell you what it is?
Oh, I'm ready for it. Hit me with it.
We don't seem to have any viewers at the moment, which is rather alarming. We're in complete isolation.
Sam is in the chat as always.
I'm in the private chat here. Oh, I see. We've got Sam. Hello, Sam. There we are. And who's Greg replaced him? Gabe was supposed to be on Borneo. Greg replaced him. Well, at least it's a G, isn't it? The GGs. what was I saying? Oh gosh, I'm moaning about this is the extraordinary thing that I realized today. I can't remember why I dislike Boston Rob. He's sort of, because he's now suddenly found himself on the back foot and is looking like a victim,
mm-hmm.
and is looking vulnerable for the first time in the show. My heart has gone out to him a little bit. And the other person who's sprung up, and I'm sure I had some gripes about John. John has sprung up into a sort of character who I sort of like again, because I think he's being victimized and people want him off. And I think, oh, John, poor Boston Rob. And then I think I'm sure I've bitched about both of them in the past.
Oh, you have. So, trust me, you have.
Have I really?
Well, oh, yes.
So I don't remember from one moment to the next, but I thought this was very interesting, how it's playing around with my sympathies.
So let's talk about the dynamic here a little bit. We get over at row two, you see John, Tammy, Zoe, and the general all together at the waterfall, bonding, leaving behind the other three in me, Rob, and Sean.
And John going on and on and on about the general. And I hadn't realized that Robert was called the general, but obviously that's to distinguish him from Boston Rob.
Mm-hmm.
My slight problem is I can't really tell the difference physically between the general and John. I have to sort of double check. And it's a shame that the skinny dipping scene was slightly blurred. Otherwise, I suppose I would have a point of reference. But
So was that your favorite part of the episode?
Well, I had to do a double. In fact, I had to rewind a few times to work out which one was actually doing the skinny dipping, and I'm still not completely convinced.
John that was doing the skinny dipping. He wanted to free himself. Yes.
Yes, I've never quite believed that. He just wanted to expose himself.
I don't know if I would want to jump in the water like that.
No, I would have thought this is not something that the entire cast have not seen before. There's a certain amount of freedom going on in these two camps, and I don't think there's anything new about seeing John leaping into the water in the All Together. So I think a lot of fuss is being made about nothing. Not that I'm casting aspersions on John's equipment, but I'm sure we're going to get into such a mess.
There we go.
Right?
10 minutes in, it's already been
ten minutes in, and we're already. And now the other thing that I found so interesting is my golden babe, Vesepia. Mm-hmm. Have I got a name right there?
Vesepia. Yes, Vesepia. Yep, you got it.
I feel that name belongs in one of those horror films with Vincent Price. Can you imagine saying Vesepia?
Well, if you say it that way, yes, of course. But if I'm just flat out saying Vesepia, to me that's not intimidating nor scary.
No, it's not. It's not scary at all. It's just such a wonderful name, and somebody like Vincent Price would just have it's a name which needs to be heard and heard again. I see her still as a winner, but today she's being sort of pushed down in the entire series. This is a publicity thing, so that we wonder whether or not she's going to get through. But
Even tell Boston Rob and Sean, who she's actually been with for a while, are not happy with her because they think that she's kissing ass.
No, Lauren, don't believe this rubbish. It's an invented production nonsense. Sean is as devoted to Vesepia as he was at the very beginning, and she is as loyal to him. I think the only thing is they've realized that Boston Rob is a shit. And that's being slightly sort of muted for us by linking him to Sean. No, I think nothing has happened there. This is a way of marking out the two groups. And I just see that it's too simplistic and too sudden.
You don't know yet. You haven't seen it.
Oh, I've seen it. I'm sure. I have no doubt at all. I promise you, Vesepia and Sean will go to the final, because Vesepia is playing this beautifully. I suspect all she's doing, if she is in control of this, and I suspect she's not entirely in control, all she's doing is distancing herself from Boston Rob. And because Boston Rob has clung rather winsomely to Sean, she also has to distance herself from Sean, because she's got to find her way into that other group.
Find a way into the crack, or you're going to be the one getting voted out, especially because of how confident John is that four is solidified and they're just going to steamroll.
Yeah, and they're not. And they're not, because they're already, there's already cracks there. And then when we get to the merge, which presumably will be next week or the week after, we will have this reunion. And what's so interesting about this episode is it sort of turns all those fears about sort of steamrolling, one tribe over another. It turns them all onto the head, because there is almost no other tribe left. This is all Rotu. It's even taken over the other side. With today, there is no one left on the other side. That's it.
Mm-hmm. There's only three left now, and it's a big deal.
It's absurd. It is absurd. It's so ill balanced. I'm sort of slightly in awe of our man. What's his name? The man with the trousers. The host man. I can't remember his name now.
Oh, Probes.
Probes. He'd be so shocked that somebody could have forgotten his name. His name is probably written about.
We're talking about, because I thought you were talking about a contestant on the show. But how can you forget Probes? He is iconic.
And because his name just sort of slips in and out of my memory. But Probes. I was slightly in awe of Probes today, because I was thinking, you know, how do you make drama out of such an ill balanced contest, and he manages to do it. He manages to keep that energy going, and I can see it sort of flagging. And I love Probst. How could you forget? I can't forget. It's just I have such difficulty with his name. It sounds like a medical instrument, really, and I feel I have to sort of think twice. Otherwise, I'm going to call him something unmentionable. And but Probes, yes, lovely Jeff.
But Probes gives you the energy today, especially at that first.
He does
the reward challenge.
The level of energy that he puts in. I thought he was going to go to the moon sort of without any sort of vehicle. I thought he was just going to ascend. You know, the moment when we realize his divinity is genuine. You know, and he will have totems all over the place to him afterwards. But you know, he confirmed why he is the host, because it was a magnificent performance today. And if we get nothing else out of the show, out of this episode, what we get is a salutation to the wonder that is Jeff Probst, in a way that no other episode up till now has really done. So he carried the show today, and he injected energy in a way that was just astonishing. I've not seen that level of energy from a host on an American show, I think, ever. I've seen it on British shows once or twice. There's a fellow called there were a number of people who did these British shows in the 1970s and 80s. Almost all of them were comedians, and they all brought with them a level of energy which was just captivating. The most energetic was Bruce Forsyth, who had all these sort of catchphrases and things, and he played to the audience. But there were so many of them who did it superbly. Most of them were fairly camp, but maybe so is Jeff Probst. I mean, you know,
As someone that has watched from season one, just seeing how Jeff has come into the person as he is as a host is incredible, especially
isn't it?
We're through 40 seasons now, and I've watched every single minute of Survivor, and he is incredible. No one can ever replace him. I don't know what the show's going to do when he's gone, because there's no one that can.
He's quite extraordinary. Up till today, I've always sort of dismissed him as oleaginous and rather sort of predatory. Not the sort of person I would like to meet in the street. And today, I thought, this is a man who can control these sort of various energies and direct the energies of the show. And that's astonishing. I really admire that. For the first time, I'm thinking, if we could ever get hold of Jeff Probst as a guest, I would be delighted. For the first time, I see his value, and I think what a silly Billy I've been not to have noticed that beforehand, not to have appreciated that beforehand.
See, you're disappointing your man Probst. You haven't been representing and being on his side.
I haven't. I've actually seen him as a blister, a wart on the program. I've seen him as a problem Probst. But now I think he's central to the thing. He's energy Probes. He's lovely.
So now we're in a new age. Probes is at the top of your list now. Respect. Let's talk
not
about
not respect, adoration. I love Probes. I'm going to be in the I'm going to be at the front of the cheerleaders for. I have to get my cheerleading cheer cheerleading costume on, you know, with the pom poms. So yeah. It's pom poms and muffs today. I could just put pom poms on the ears, couldn't I? And that would do the job.
Seeing an outfit change for next week then.
Outfit change and go. Probst. Jeff, rah, rah, rah. There we are.
Okay, so I want to hear your takes on, I know you're not a huge challenge person, but we do have the reward challenge, and I think it led to a great finish. It was
I hated the first challenge. I hated it. I couldn't work out what was going on, and this anchor, the chain. I was so confused. But so was Jeff. You know, my darling Jeff, God Jeff. He was confused as well, and it took a few minutes for him to get reality sort of properly aligned.
But he realized that John and the general, that was their fault because they could not paddle, they could not get on the same page, and they didn't follow instructions.
Did you know that I was a rower?
I think you mentioned that before.
Yeah, I was a rower, and I was also a coach, and I did in fact coach Olympic oarsmen to victory. I had nothing to do with their victory. I just happened to be one of the coaches when they were practicing.
Where did they go wrong?
Where did they go wrong?
Yes.
Who was it who was saying? So John was giving the orders. John was barking the orders.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he should have been. I think he should have worked out what Robert was actually doing,
mm-hmm.
and then compensated. One of the problems with sort of competitive rowing in a four or an eight. Is the you have the cox at one end, which was once when I was very small was my Rolex until I crashed the boat too many times. Now I was transferred from the back of the boat to the front of the boat, and I became bow, which is generally given to a small person, but I hated it. And then I took up coxing again when I went to Oxford, and I quite enjoyed it, but I used to switch off the microphone because I hated the thought that my voice was being sort of relayed electronically. I just thought this was an opportunity to do some vocal exercises down the river. And my obsession, I think, started when I was in Oxford as a cox. I suddenly got obsessed with the idea that the stroke, the person who everybody follows in a sense,
mm-hmm.
The stroke can be out of time.
Yeah.
And I used to bark orders at stroke, and they didn't like me for this because they see themselves, you know, even more than Jeff Probst, they see themselves as having attained a certain divinity.
Well, the one giving the orders is not actually doing any of the work. They're just giving
the orders. Well, that's the cox. Cox is giving, but a good cox doesn't need to give the orders. A good cox can sort of imbue the boat with his or her own spirit, which is what I tried to do. But there is a rhythm to the boat, and if you sense that rhythm, then the stroke will follow that rhythm. If the stroke tries to set a different rhythm, everything goes wrong. Or if the stroke actually can't set a rhythm, it's metronomic. If you're out of time, your boat doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It's about being in time. And it's about setting up a wonderful rhythm and then getting the balance right. So as you take your stroke, and you dip the blade in the water and then you pull through, and then you take the blade out of the water and you feather the blade, and then you slide on your slide forward. It's that slide on your slide forward. If you're all balanced, it's beautiful because what you see in the water is eight little puddles. And the boat glides forward, or also lurches forward. Actually, it's crazy. If you're the cox at the back, you really notice the lurching because it jams into your back every every stroke, and it's happening correctly. But if somebody is slightly ill balanced, or if you put on the rudder as a cox, you never use the rudder. You just don't want to use the rudder. You want to get the stroke side to just slightly to pull slightly harder, and bow side to pull slightly less hard, and then the boat spins naturally. And that's the cox's orders, and like a conductor, the cox knows at which point in the river to for stroke side to pull a little harder, and that way you don't need to use the rudder. You don't, because the rudder acts as a sort of brake, and that's what so what John was telling Rob to do was to act as a brake. Yes. And that's why they were late, because they were ahead. And Rob was saying, you know, just stop me, because I'm so much better than... No, you've got two blades, mm-hmm. two little oars, and that's why you've got two of them. You're supposed to work together.
And also, John likes to be in charge, and so he probably thought he was the best.
John likes to be in charge, and this is the problem. You know, John likes to be in charge. John likes to show off, as we saw. Well, as we didn't see.
Well, sadly, remember, you know, he even said going into that challenge,
British,
we don't care about winning this reward challenge. We don't care about the immunity. So he said, we're going to put our best people forward to compete in the reward challenge, and we don't care if we don't win the immunity challenge. Did you really put your best people forward? I don't think they did.
He put himself forward, which is not necessarily the best people for the job, and this is one of the mistakes of self-inflated sort of I don't know whether he was self-inflated as he was doing his jumping in the water, but if that had been a British program, we wouldn't have had the blurring, and I would have been so happy. I would have been able to identify him. He would have then had some sort of distinguishing feature which would have marked him out from the general. And I would have been satisfied. But as it was, you know, they're indistinguishable, and I don't really care who paddles better, because you know, they're both a bit dull. But I warmed to him as time went by, and I didn't like Boston Rob outing him on the program. But then I didn't like the fact that the program use that little section.
We can't
turn around to Boston Rob and say you're naughty. That's very horrible to out somebody on a television program, because it's the television program used that footage. So the television program is as culpable as Boston Rob.
Yeah, we're both to blame for sure, because Boston Rob should have never made that comment, but also the show chose to use that footage and put it in there.
Yeah, yeah. And why would the show choose to do that? And I thought about this, of course, because you know I was outed in a way on my program, and it doesn't matter how it's done, whether you're sort of encouraged or whatever. You just think this is not really relevant to to the show, and this is not. You know, we've got into a strange world where people are defining themselves by their sexual preferences. For the most part, that isn't our definition. Our definition is about how we use the various parts of ourselves to our advantage, and that's just one element. So we're not defined just by that. We're defined by so many things, and we want that variety of definition. Sam said, did they ask John's permission to use the footage? I would very much doubt it. I would assume that they've already decided they've got that permission. You know, in the circle, of course, it went out pretty well live, so you had no control over that. You didn't know what people were actually saying. And, you know, I've never made any secret of my life. But equally, I've never made a big fuss of trying to define myself. I've just thought, well, you look at the colour of my socks and you draw your own conclusion. And if you're wrong, I think you're rather stupid. But, the ice cream. Is that an ice cream van? No.
That was my office phone. So I do.
Oh my goodness!
No, we have
We have ice cream vans that come round and make little noises. Do you have ice cream vans in the States?
We do. Not in my small town.
Really? It's your small town. I'm so sorry you haven't got an ice cream van.
We do not, but it's ice cream trucks are iconic. They're delicious and amazing.
I'm so pleased. Do you have lollipop ladies?
What are those? Because we probably do, but...
Well, lollipop ladies are people who stand with a little banner on zebra crossings just outside the school so school children can cross the road in safety. They're lovely. There are sometimes, I suspect, lollipop gentlemen, but I think it's become sort of gender specific, or at least it did for quite a long time in the 1960s and 70s, and I presume they still exist. We call them crossing guards.
That's why I was we probably have them, but we definitely do not use that term.
A crossing guard sounds like something dental, doesn't it? I'm going to give you a crossing guard. No,
they hold up the stop signs. They hold up.
Do
the
they
stop
really?
Signs. Yeah,
like a train.
Yeah,
like
if they're crossing for school, like the kids going to school. Yeah, I had those when I was younger. Yeah.
I'm so pleased. Anyway, so we could imagine that you've just had a visit from the ice cream van.
We can imagine that. But
I was an usher in the cinema for a while, and I had one of those trays, and they said go down the aisle, and with your ices and your very, very, very various ice creams and the little torch. Which I thought was tremendous fun, and I've always wanted to do it. So for a short while, I did do it. I remember watching the same films again and again and again. So there are certain films which are sort of fixed in my mind. One of them is one of the Star Trek films, and another one was the thing where people go through this portal into ancient Egypt, or what was it called? I can't remember what it was called anyway. But yeah, and there was a Sylvester Stallone film. I only did it for a term. I was teaching or something at the same time, so my students could have gone to one of my lectures and then gone to see a flick at the local cinema. And there I was selling the ice creams. I thought, you know, that was very appropriate. Egalitarian. There we are. Okay, where were we?
Before we go back to Survivor, what I have got to ask, since we brought up ice cream, what is your favorite ice cream?
Oh, vanilla, ideally with a flake, and 99. Do you have those?
We have vanilla, but what?
Yeah, I try not to eat ice cream in public anymore because it sort of gets stuck in the beard and looks, frankly, sort of, it looks disturbing.
It could be a little rough. I understand.
It's not a good image. So ice cream is something that is done secretly.
Okay.
I think calorie intake is not something I should boast about. It's like chocolate. You hide them in your pocket. Well, you can't hide ice cream in your pocket because you sort of walk around the place with the soggy trousers. But
that would not work well.
I'll tell you the most extraordinary naughty story. When I was a little boy and I went to school.
Wait, yeah, no. Prepare themselves for this story, because sometimes what you say comes out of left field and we just don't know what's coming.
Oh really? Oh, no, you don't need to prepare yourself too much. So I was sent away to school. So when I was very young, and suddenly we had these sort of horrible meals, and I realized for a short period, now I've got over it, partly because of the soggy shorts. You've got to imagine me in little shorts at sort of the age of seven or something, without the beard, I think probably. it was detachable and looking very innocent, and I was faced with these tomatoes and we had this rule: you weren't allowed to leave anything on your plate. If you wanted to leave something on your plate, you had to take your plate up to two teachers who sat at a sort of desk in the center of the dining hall. You had to show them your plate. And then they would say, "Come here, can't you eat that?" "No, no." And they'd go and try. You'll be left eating when everybody else had gone, and you'll be sort of pushing this tomato around your plate. And anyway, I had the great idea that I could take these tomatoes and put them in my short pockets, and then I could dispose of them later. But when I got up, the shorts were sort of 1970s shorts and quite tight and quite short, and the tomatoes exploded in my shorts, and yeah, there was a sort of, they started dribbling.
Oh my God.
I had dribbling tomatoes down my legs, it was dreadful, sticky, gooey, and sort of very distinctly moist. Not as bad as fish. The breaded fish, which was just disgusting, it was slightly cold. And I remember I was ill for 1 week. I was often ill, and I was sent up to this sort of little infirmary place, this little hospital that the school had. And there were about four or five of us there, and we were allowed to eat on our own. And we had a little table, and the matron would come in and supervise every so often, but then she would go out. And I thought, we've got this ghastly fish. What do I do? And I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll take the fish and I'll put it in my dressing gown pocket. We used little pajamas and dressing gowns. You can imagine the image. It's a very, very traditional flannelette pajamas with stripes. And I put the fish in my pocket, and I took it to the loo. And I put it in the loo, and then I flushed, and it wouldn't go. It was sort of like one of those things, you know. So we all have this problem with floaters. And this fish was a defiant floater. No matter how many times I pulled the chain, it wouldn't go. So I eventually thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I can't leave it in here. And then the matron was banging on the door. Are you all right? Are you all right? Yes, I'm all right.
You're scrambling then right there.
So I take the fish out of the loo. Now a very moist fish as well as cold.
Oh, God.
Put it back in my dressing gown pocket and take it back to the table. I think, what the hell can I do with this now? I can't eat it. It's been in the loo.
I hope you weren't ever considering eating it.
Of course, I was considering it. I was seven. You know what? What are you going to do? And then I saw, oh, there's a slightly open window. I thought, I can just sort of toss the fish out of the window. So I did. And unfortunately, at that moment, the headmaster pulled out of the school in his car, and the fish landed on the bonnet of the car.
Oh, no.
Must have been like a sort of hurricane moment. Fish falling from the sky, cooked and breaded. I heard nothing. So I think I got away with it. But so, you know, I have so many of these food stories. A litany. Now I like fish, but you know, it is a way of curing you. Fish and tomatoes. I can't think of anything nicer than a nice plump tomato. And I when I see a tomato now, I don't think I want to put that down my trousers. But I was cured. I was cured by mushy tomatoes. So many ghastly things. Oh God.
This has been fantastic thus far.
Sorry.
But we're going to transition back to Survivor, of course, for the listeners.
I had my own Survivor experience. We're sort of facing all this ghastly food.
That is true. Facing all the food, but we're going to take a moment and hear a word from our sponsors.
Is this going to be naughty? Let's hope so.
We never know. We're unpredictable, right?
We never know. Let's let the people have it. We will watch with bated breath and think about tomatoes or something.
Breaking news! This important PSA is brought to you by Manscaped.com. This is your public service announcement and the news you've all been waiting for. The Manscaped engineering team has confirmed that they've successfully created the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, which is now available for purchase in the USA and Canada. This new trimmer was just released only moments ago, and we're one of the first to get our hands on it and share the news. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer just for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code SURVIVOR at manscaped.com.
I'm one of the first people to try the new 4.0, and I'm blown away by the performance. The craftsmanship and details on the 4.0 are next level. Their advanced ceramic blade and skin-safe technology is so good that it almost seems as if Manscaped worked with Elon Musk's engineers to ensure your testes are as safe as possible. Now, I've had my moments in the past where I tried to use the old disposable razor, tried to do some shaving. Oh my God, it looked like a 1980s NWA world title match. Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes wearing the Crimson Mask. Not anymore. No way, Jose. Oh my God, we're talking what makes this trimmer different than the other trimmers? It's a new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock created for people who like to travel like me. I'm in Miami once a month for wrestling. I got Paola from 90 Day Fiancé. She's not checking out my balls, but if she did, oh, I would be ready. Now, we also have the Lawnmower 4.0 giving you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. And the new trimmer allows you to customize your trim all over through additional guard links with sizes 1 through 4. And looks wise, it's sleek with a two-tone matte and gloss finish. Even features a hot foil stamped black chrome Manscaped logo. Show that mower off loud and proud.
The optimized Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is also waterproof, so you can groom in the shower and not have to worry about making a mess on your bathroom floor. Did I mention wireless charging? The Lawnmower 4.0's new wireless charging system uses electromagnetic induction, which can help battery length last longer. If you're still trimming your face with your ball trimmer, it's time to make some changes. So here you go. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SURVIVOR at manscaped.com. No person wants to end up with pubes in their mouth, and your balls will thank you.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code SURVIVOR. They love it when we do that at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. manscaped.com. Use that promo code SURVIVOR and unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
Was that everything you wanted?
That was everything I wanted. But for some bizarre reason, the tune It's a Small World After All was going round and round in my head. I think that's because of our... I don't think that had anything to do with the manscaping device or indeed what was being manscaped or any reference to John. I think it was purely because we were talking about ice cream vans. Anyway, there we are. Let's get back to Sam is saying that John's nephew and niece learned that he was gay because of the program, and I think it's irresponsible of program makers to do that, and program makers want everything to be written in sort of in semaphore, really, and we're bigger than that. We have multifaceted personalities, and I think that's the exciting thing. So you let this personality emerge, and ideally, the competition, the game, the show helps to reveal that. But what I find with Marquesas is that the show, it's like Mojave. I just can't pronounce these words. It's like the show, the contest is more important than discovering the characters, which is why I'm having such difficulty identifying people. Because I don't think it's that they're not interesting. It's that the show is not interested in them. The show is only interested in them because they're horrible. So we know who Boston Rob is because he's horrible. What is Blue Chew? Asks Anthony Eros. It's a little pill you take to make John look impressive, I think, if he wasn't blurred. There we are. Sierra Mist. So we go to the product placement as if John's product placement wasn't enough. And we're thinking about there his skinny dipping rather than his being outed. I despise product.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Placement like that, I don't really approve of that, and I don't really approve of the sort of meal. It's
want the Sierra Mist, like that would have put like a little bit of pep in your step there.
No, I don't drink these things out of cans.
Okay, but that's fair. You say you don't drink these things, but if you're on the show and you're starving and you're thirsty, I feel as though you'd basically drink pretty much anything.
But I think it's bad for you. So you remember in the film Gandhi, where Gandhi does his first or second hunger strike, and then when he finishes, he says he'll just have a very small amount of water with some lemon juice or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's being wise. You break your fast slowly. You don't guzzle down an entire meal of waste products.
Oh, I'm not saying to guzzle it down, but I think you should have a little bit of it to give you some energy. Because
I don't think Sierra Mist is the way. Mist is not the way to get energy.
No, but just like a little bit in your system just to have something. Because that would be great,
but you know, there should be a doctor on hand to say this is the sort of food that you should have after you've been living on crabs and bits and pieces.
Well, and John makes a good point. He said he wouldn't have touched half of that food that was there because it's going to make you sick the amount that they eat in excess, and they're just not, their bodies can't process it fully.
And we've seen that.
You have a little bit of it to just give yourself that energy that can help you potentially get through the next immunity challenge.
But it should be medically controlled. I think again this is irresponsible of the shows. Jeff makes some gnarly milkshakes.
That future.
Does he?
Yes, but they're not, when he's saying gnarly here, they're not that great, I can tell you that.
What's he made them out of?
Oh, the mixture of literally everything. It's a gross food eating challenge.
Well, this is Jeff as in Probes.
Yeah, Probes, yeah.
It's like manna from heaven. He produced. Oh, I see. He makes milk. But did last year? Wasn't he doing stuff about cow's blood? So,
yes, I would. The blood is probably way better tasting than the shakes that Probes makes in the future.
Right. Yes. Well. I have heard dreadful things about what goes on in restaurants when the service staff don't like you.
That's why you have to be very kind to every single person you interact with.
I entirely agree. But there we are. Or at least if you want to be rude, you save it until afterwards.
Well, okay, I do want to ask you your opinion on this, because I think this was like an iconic piece of the episode when Boston Rob goes up to Zoe and point blank period to her face asks her, is there an alliance? And Zoe looks at him with a stare of what?
She denies it.
Yes.
And she says, well, we're friends. And then John, it is John.
Yes. Then he goes to John.
Contradicts her and says, of course there's an alliance.
Yes.
I'm not a... Because of these programs, you've made a distinction between an alliance and a friendship. To me, these are synonymous. But what you understand by alliance, what we understand by alliance now, is a calculated alignment of interests.
Mm-hmm.
And friendship is not terribly interesting. What I would like to see all the time is friendship over strategy and alliances. But I think I'd be fighting a losing battle if I tried.
You would be fighting a losing battle with that one.
I'm not afraid of strategic playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a great fan of chess. I'm a great fan of losing chess, and I'm a great fan of seeing how other people's strategy is developing, and I can see it sort of, you know, moves before it actually takes place.
Well, let's talk about John's strategy, though. Talk about John's strategy real quick, because remember, he goes up to Tammy and says, hey, do whatever you can to throw this immunity challenge, because he wants to get rid of Boston Rob, because John believes that Boston Rob's not going to fit into his long-term game plans. But Tammy, you see, is very hesitant about that because she's a competitor. She wants to win. And she's the one that has to participate in the challenge with V, Sean, and Boston Rob.
Yeah. Yeah. The second challenge, the immunity challenge, yes, was significantly better than the first challenge.
Tell me why.
Because it was understandable. The first challenge, there were so many bits to it. I just got confused and bored. And I think there's nothing worse than boring your audience. You know, you don't invite the audience to come and watch your show and say, now I'm going to bore you with so many rules that you're not going to be able to follow it. And basically, I as Jeff Probst, or as, you know, producer, I'm telling you that you audience are stupid because you can't follow what's going on. You know, I hold my hands up. I am really quite stupid. I can't really follow the plot of Fast and Furious. You know, I do need to constantly be reassured that this person is somebody who I'm supposed to be rooting for. Should I use that word? Yes. Okay. So I'm rooting for this particular person. So I do like this person. I like this girl. So does she know him? I do have to keep asking these questions. I am rather like sort of granny sucking a sweet in the corner saying, have I seen him before? That's me, unfortunately. And part of the problem, I think, is that a lot of films have the same casting director, and they obviously cast to a particular type. And so I find all the girls look pretty well the same, and all the boys look the same. And I want to see people who look radically different. And if they're not going to look radically different, I'd like them to be color-coded. So at least I know who I'm looking at. And if they change clothes, I'm completely confused. So yeah, I am rather lost. At least with Survivor, they don't change clothes, you know. That helps. But I'm still, because the character development hasn't been advanced enough, I'm still sort of not invested in these characters, in these people.
Yes. So
and that worries me.
Get to the immunity challenge.
And Anthony is my man.
He agrees with you. All right.
I would always watch friendship over strategy. There you are. You see, isn't that lovely? I've got an ally.
You have one ally. One ally.
Are you telling me you so disapprove of what I'm saying, Laura?
I so disagree with what you're saying. I absolutely disagree. Yep. For me personally, you're playing a game. Yes, you're going to make friends out of it, but if the people that you're truly intending to be friends with, they might not fit into your game plan. So you might have to
toss them to the wayside in order to win. No, Lauren, I entirely agree. And I don't mind strategy, and I don't mind alliance, as long as I can also see this friendship growing.
Mm-hmm.
But the television show doesn't want to show us the friendship growing. It just wants to show us the alliance and the strategy, which I find slightly dull and boring. I want the whole package. We're back to John and his skinny dipping again, aren't we? And I want to see the whole package. I feel that Jeff Probst has been targeting me towards this game that he loves, and I love the characters in the game, and I love the way the game gives the characters an opportunity to develop and for us to get to know them. And I wish production would recognize that's what I want to see, and that's what I think reality TV is about. So yeah, you know, I just get frustrated with this, but you know, I'm learning to live with it. I'm learning to live with it, Lauren.
I'm glad. I love your reactions each and every week, because sometimes I come into a podcast and I don't know whether you're going to be joyful or disappointed with how the episode goes.
Well, what do you think I am today? I think I'm quite joyful today.
You're joyful because you're finally on the probes train. That is why you're joyful.
I'm on the probes train, and I was put into a good mood by John's exuberance. Lots of speculation there. So Cody is saying, I do have to say, I do also enjoy character development. Thank you, Cody. Some of my favorite survivors really weren't great players. Exactly. And we're not interested in people winning. Actually, probably the best telly is where somebody fails dramatically. You know, think of Bill Clinton and Nixon, a character who is big and fails. This is fantastic.
So we remember it forever. Like if they are just this close to the end of the game, and all of a sudden they get the boot at fourth place, but you see that character development, and you actually get to know who they are as a person.
Absolutely,
and you're
but
rooting
it doesn't
for
even
them.
Need to be. It doesn't even need to be late on in the game. Some characters are so big. Who was the wonderful lady that we had in the last in the Australian season, who got thrown out quite early on, and we interviewed her independently.
Are you talking about Mad Dog?
Yes.
Yes. She's very entertaining. She got voted out early.
She got voted out quite early on. Exactly. Yes. And there were a number of them also in season one. You know, big personalities. You can suddenly think, now I know why you were cast in this show. I can see it, and you've just made that episode. Whereas, for example, Gina, by the time she went today, I still didn't know who she was, and did I care? No, not remotely. It's sad, really.
Let's talk about that then. So what ends up happening is you have Pascal and Aaliyah. They're obviously super bonded, super tight with each other. And then you have Kathy, who recognizes that and somewhat feels a little bit on the outside there. And then Gina is the fourth person. So Kathy was very concerned that they could choose Gina over her. Ultimately, they didn't pick that option. But my other question to you is, should Kathy have teamed up with Gina and tried to force some sort of a tie?
Well, if she wanted to go out herself, if she wanted to sacrifice herself.
I'm talking about for future, though, potentially. Like, if you know, because you obviously don't know if your tribe is going to merge with the other tribe.
In one sense, Lauren, absolutely. But in another sense, why would I sacrifice myself for Gina? I don't know who she is. This is the problem. If Gina was a little bit more, if I saw more of Gina's character, well, then yes, obviously, I would be throwing myself at her feet. Say, let me sacrifice myself for you. Please, please. I would rather go than you. But I think, you're dull television. Why stay? Go.
Oh, no, I agree with that, but as a potential option, she could have maybe done that, because if you look at the pieces here, say they don't end up merging and that tribe goes again, Pascal and Aaliyah are voting together, and then Kathy would be out.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But I think they got it right this time. You know, Gina went. We're hardly going to notice that she's gone, sadly. Zoe, I'm afraid. Everyone has similar potential, but Zoe, of course, in my mind, is saved by the fact that she has such a lovely Greek name, and I want to just start sort of dancing, singing Rebetika or something. And
Zoe to me is a total dud on this entire season. I know you love Zoe's name, but I'm gonna be blunt with it. She's
Do you think Zoe is more dull than Gina?
Yes.
How is this?
To me, Gina had much more personality. Zoe is just, every time I just see her on the screen, it's just a blank stare. Even that encounter she has with Boston Rob, she just looks at him and it's like, we have a friendship. And there was no personality.
I do have to ask myself every time I think, Zoe, oh, Zoe's just been speaking. And has she said anything that I remember? No, not at all.
Thank you.
It was Zoe, and I like her name. But that's the only thing
you find compelling about her.
It is the only thing I find compelling about her. on my book, I've been drawing pictures of Melina Mercouri, so Greek actresses, and putting Zoe next to them. But they don't look like Zoe. If you ask me now to draw Zoe, I can't think of any distinguishing features. I can't even think what color hair she's got. So she's made a sort of zero impression on me, except for her name. So her mother is responsible for the impression she's made, you know, unless her father named her. Maybe her father named her. Her parents are responsible for the impression she's made. She's made no contribution to her television personality.
I want to make this argument, because I thought Gina brought much more to the table than Zoe has thus far,
but not that much. Or both of them. So we go back to our restaurant image. So they're both behaving like people who are just presenting food, and you know, I've not noticed them. I'm interested in the food. I'm more distracted by John's extravagance at the waterfall than I can't really. This is the really awful thing. I can't really tell the difference between John and the general.
They look nothing alike.
They really are to me, and they go in my mind as completely interchangeable, because I've not got anything about them in my mind that distinguishes them. The only person every time he comes into shot, I think, Boston Rob, I know who he is, because I don't like him. And Jeff Probst, you know, got man with a funny name. And
wait a minute, you say you remember Probst, but you did forget him for a slight second earlier on.
I did because I was thinking, what's his name? I have to think that there's a wonderful anthem by Benjamin Britten, where he set the music for Mad Person, and one of the lines is, I will consider my cat Jeffrey, for he is a cat of great personal valour. Cat chases female mouse, male mouse will not depart without threatening and daring. And that's Jeff, isn't it, really? Jeff is chasing a mouse. I do find it extraordinary, because all the Jeffs I know spell their name with a G. And I did know a Jeff with a J. And now I know another Jeff with a J. And it's difficult.
There's many, many, many more Americans with spell it with a J.
Yeah, well, you know, you could spell it with a C if you were Turkish, couldn't you? Jeff. But then of course, you'd start to sound like something that cleans the lavatory. Jiff, isn't it? Isn't that Jiff? Yeah. But Jeff is if you spelt it in Turkish, it would be C-I-C-E-F, which would be quite exciting, wouldn't it? We could start a new craze.
So I will say, because I do have a question for you, but big thing about this episode, I will say, is that I do think Pascal and Nulia still made the right decision in keeping Kathy, because Kathy is very, very strong.
100% they made the right decision.
And does a lot around camp. So that's my big takeaway from that trial. They made the right decision, but I'm ultimately trying to play devil's advocate for Kathy in that position, essentially knowing that she is not lockstepped with Pascal and Nulia.
She was. There was no debate in her mind at all.
But I'm just saying, I like to, you know, sometimes think of other options that could have potentially happened that we could have seen in the episode.
No. Gina was working incredibly hard.
She was working hard
with all these sort of running up to people and asking them silly things. You know, what do you think of this? What do you think of this watermelon or whatever this thing? It looks like a cactus or what? That was her, wasn't it? You know.
Yes. Look at this. It was with the pineapple. Yes.
It's a pineapple. That's it.
A pineapple. There we go.
You know, there's a song in Cabaret which isn't in the film, the pineapple song. It's a wonderful song. So she could have done an entire musical term, which would at least have imprinted her on my mind. But no, she holds a pineapple in some sort of limp way. So limp that I can't even identify the fruit. No, you know, it's just desperate. So it's like the person who comes up to you because, you know, they've just done an exam and they say, and they find an excuse to talk to you. And you think, I've not spoken to you for the entire year. Now you're talking. There's a person, I might be a bit indiscreet here, but there was a person in my university and he didn't tend to come to lectures or classes, which is a bit naughty of him, but he was very engaging. When he did turn up, I was very entertained by him, and I didn't know his name. I always knew him by the name that everybody called him, which was Banana. God knows why he was called Banana. But anyway, yeah, he was. And then towards the end of 1 year, the university got rather irritated with him because he hadn't turned up to most of his lectures for other people. He turned up to more of my lectures than he did to anybody else, which is quite flattering. And suddenly he was all over the place in the corridors talking to me, and I realized he was trying to make a case for my interceding for him. Well, of course I did, and he stayed. But the sort of conversations that he had with me were completely pointless. And I was thinking, oh, come on. You know, it's this is sort of so desperate. You know, I know what you're doing. And he could have appeared there with a pineapple. In fact, maybe he did. Maybe he did. Maybe he was in the corridors with a pineapple saying, sir, professor.
quite potentially.
Here's a possibility.
But yeah, I will say, if you're talking about character development, we've gotten a lot of character development from Kathy. So
what did you think of her yoga her physical? What was it called? It was called Tigran. It sounds like an Armenian name. Tigran.
My opinion on it, whatever relaxes you and gets you centered, I'm down for.
Oh, I'm not sure whether I approve of all the tapping. The intimate tapping. The intimate slapping, should we call it? I found that was a bit much, really. I mean, if you've got to slap yourself, you should at least do it off camera, I think. And then we can imagine what's going on.
Normally be doing it off camera, so
not if you're on a reality TV show.
I understand that, but she was. It's fine. I will say
maybe we should have blurred. Maybe we should have blurred her while she was doing her intimate tapping.
Just as John was blurred, yes.
Yes. Then we could have speculated about it.
Okay.
And that would have made it so much more entertaining. Oh, Kathy's doing some intimate tapping.
But yes, they made the right decision in keeping Kathy, in my opinion. So
yes.
We're going to see what
Kathy's
ends up
worth
happening.
Her weight in gold. In fact, today was the first time and I thought Kathy might even stand a chance of getting through to the final. There you are. I'm now on the Kathy tribe. Pascal, I'm afraid, will be jettisoned, which is such a shame because he's such a lovely character.
Okay, so I want to know, we're six episodes in. I need to know now your updated final four.
Final four?
Yes. Updated final four.
Sean, okay. The sepia. Maybe Kathy. I'd like to say John. But I think John would be taken out because that's the nature of this particular show. They take out everybody they think is good. And John has good qualities.
You're saying that Sean, the Kathy, and John.
Okay. Yes. Is that all okay? Right.
I don't know. You tell me.
You're doing your poker face.
I never give anything away.
It's very good. I'm very impressed.
I have skill with this in some of the hosting and things I do. So don't worry, I won't give any spoilers to you ever.
I've got what's this one? Kathy put out fire, Gina irritated. What was that about?
Oh, okay. We can talk about this real quick, and then we're running on time a little bit. So.
I'm so sorry. Yes,
no, we're totally fine, but let's talk about
this. We've indulged ourselves today.
I need your opinion.
Go on.
So Gina was saying that you shouldn't put sand in the fire, but Kathy was saying...
Oh, God, yes, that was it.
Yes.
Give
us your hot take on this, Professor Tim.
Why would anybody put sand... I was a scout. I hated it. Why would anybody put sand in the fire?
Well, now you disagree with Kathy.
However, do you know about the origins of the word curfew?
I don't know if I've necessarily been told.
No, because it's so exciting. So there was a box. So British law in the Middle Ages, there was a law which said that in your house you had to have a fire. So you didn't have a chimney. You had a fire in the center of the house, and the smoke went up through the thatch. And basically all that smoke going through the thatched roof acted as a sort of disinfectant, and the little animals dropped down from the thatched roof into your soup. So you had so you had protein as well. And you slept around the fire. But last thing at night, you put a curfew over the fire, which was a sort of box. You dampened down the fire, so the only thing that was left lit was your backlog, from which we get the word backlog. And your backlog is glowing, and you put this wooden box over your fire, which keeps your backlog glowing, but doesn't give it enough oxygen to sort of burn. And then in the morning, you take your curfew off, you blow on your backlog, and you bring your fire back up. Now, if you let your fire go out, you were punished because, there was an idea that your houses had to be warm and stuffy to keep disease away. And if you got disease in your house, then that would spread around the village. And so you were endangering the community. So it was very dangerous to let your fire go out. And that's where the curfew comes from. So nobody thought about putting sand in the fire. They just put a box over it.
Yeah, I would not have been for the sand in the fire. I was kind of confused with why that was a thing. But, Kathy was gung-ho about wanting it to happen.
Yeah, no. I'm afraid Kathy was wrong. Poor Kathy.
Kathy was wrong in that instant, for sure.
But I think she was also wrong with her Tigon. And Anthony is saying it's spelled Qigong, Tigong, Qigong, Qigong. I was convinced it was Tigong. I think I'm getting quite hard of hearing. Or maybe people aren't sort of that clear. Now, did I have anything else? Obvious Alliance, Pascal regretting the loss of Gabriel. It was such a lovely moment. Mm-hmm. Tammy, 3/4 of the time we spend fantasizing about food. That's me too as well. I mean, what is your favorite food?
Oh, I would probably say I'm a fish person, so I really enjoy salmon.
Yes, salmon is wonderful. Have you ever had sturgeon?
I have not.
Don't tell anybody, but it's not something I recommend. It's sturgeon. They don't have bones. They have what is it, gristle or something or whatever. It's like plastic. It's like eating somebody's sort of dentures. And
probably wouldn't be a fan of that.
No. And they produce these eggs, which is caviar. And you think, oh, okay, so I've got the caviar. Now I've got to have the fish that produces it. I just don't want to get anywhere near that fish. Prehistoric fish, but there we are. My favorite. I would quite enjoy coming to America because my favorite food is cheddar cheese, strong cheddar cheese, and I know you produce it rather well.
We have pretty good cheese here, I can tell you that. So that would be an incentive for sure.
But I don't think you have Ribena. You're looking blankly at me, so you know. And they don't have this in Russia either. But the name, it's a sort of purple. It's a sort of purple drink. It's a sort of beverage. But it was sort of invented in the 1930s or 40s in Britain, and it's a cheap thing for children. Very sweet, black currant drink. And they obviously thought, can we think of a name that no one else has thought of? And somebody clearly had some sort of communist sympathies and had been over to Russia, because in Russia there is a purple drink made from a berry called Ribena, and it is disgusting. Because having not got access to Ribena in Moscow, I thought I'd go to the supermarket and buy some Ribena. Disgusting, such a bad. After that, I put Ribena in my suitcase along with some very strong cheddar. And once or twice, my suitcase got sort of delayed in transit. And when I went back to the airport to collect it, I could smell cheese from the arrivals lounge. Mm-hmm. It was disturbing. You know, very very strong cheddar gets high very quickly. It's more overwhelming than Stilton.
Well, I have got to say, I think we spent at least a quarter, maybe a third of this podcast somewhat talking about food. But
well, that's good. That's good.
As Tammy said, we talk about food fairly often. So it fit for this episode that we talked about food as much as we did. But with that being said, Professor Tim, this was a delight. It's so great getting to talk to you about Survivor.
Nice. So nice. And thank you so much for raising my spirits about Survivor. I'm going to go to episode 7 with steely determination and enthusiasm and a great love, devotion to the wonder that is Jeff Probst and all his various icons and totems.
And yes. So where can people find you on social media?
On Instagram at Professor_Tim_Wilson, Twitter Prof_Tim_Wilson, and on YouTube at Zontul Films Limited. That's ZONTULFILMSLTD or ZON if you're in Britain. So that's
there, there you have it.
Yeah. What about you? Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Lauren_Pratt6, and then Instagram, it's just Pratt6. So super simple. My favorite number is 6, so you can't forget it.
Why?
That was my soccer number in high school and college.
You played soccer?
I did.
What position is 6?
I played outside mid and center mid.
Oh my goodness. There we are. So you're a sort of all-rounder.
A little bit there, yeah. A little bit of speed, a little bit of technical ability, yes.
There we are. Excellent. Okay, right. We better run away with
it. Yeah, we better run away. But I just want to say thanks so much, guys, for tuning in. We'll be back next week to talk episode number 7 of Marquesas. Cody will be back with Professor Tim and myself. Be sure to check out all the content we have going on here on Reality NSFW. We have Big Brother coverage with Brent and Bobby. They are fabulous. If you are looking for some amazing coverage, they have it for you. They're great. I listened to the recap that they did of the premiere and it was amazing. So be sure to check them out. Also become a patron at adfreensfw.com. We have some great things going on the patron end, such as the Q&A that they do weekly. It's awesome. Johnny and Matt are fabulous, and as well as Zach. So be sure to check us out. And thanks so much for joining us. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.